This is KGVM 95.9 on your dial, or you can stream us on kgvm.org. We are the Gallatin Valley Community Radio, home of the Men's Network Radio. I'm James Kozlik, your host. The Men's Network Radio is a resource for men to connect with local and national men's groups. Every group has different belief systems and criteria that they use in assisting men with self-discovery. The Men's Network Radio is a public service or resource to help connect men with a group that resonates for them on a personal level. We also have guests with various backgrounds with self-help, therapeutic, and other modalities towards self-discovery. Our topics include men honoring self, men honoring nature, men honoring women, and the ultimate union. Tonight's guest will be Anne Haug. She's a facilitator for the work of Byron Katie. You might ask, what is the work? Well, the work is a way to identify and question thoughts that cause all the suffering personally and in the world. The work is four questions and what they call turnarounds, and we'll get into that a little later. But I just want to give a brief introduction. Byron Katie was one time a very successful real estate agent, and she was living out in California, and something happened to her where she fell into deep depression, got angry. She spent several years locked in her bedroom running her real estate business and not talking to family and etc. And at one point she even admitted herself to a halfway house, and she was so angry that they actually put her in a bedroom up in the attic. And all of a sudden one day she felt the joy of life. And from there, she created this inquiry, because that's what she was doing with herself. What is it? You know, she kept asking herself, what is going on? What am I doing? And she started this inquiry and developed this whole program that she now calls The Work. And you could, one of her books is Loving What Is. It's a book that I picked up, my wife and I picked up many years ago. And it was transformative. We started doing the work on a personal basis. And, of course, you know, we switched back and forth from different modalities, at least in our life. There's so much out there. But the work was very prolific. And you're going to see a sample of that in tonight's show. I mean, to be honest with you, I had this interview and Anne explained everything here in such an eloquent way. And this first part of the show, never recorded. I don't know what happened. The second part recorded beautifully, and that's where she'll answer a couple questions, and then we'll actually do a session. Four questions that come up is it true? Can you absolutely know that it is true? How do you react, or what happens when you believe that thought? And who would you be without that thought? So every time, you know, we're ready to blame somebody for something or judge somebody, we always want to ask that question, is it true? And if we say yes, is it true, then we want to get to that second question, is it absolutely true? And I could give you plenty of examples where in my life personally, I've had to stop and say, well, not absolutely true, because I just might think it is true by perceiving it. We all have perceptions in this world, and the perceptions that come to mind end up in our subconscious. And that's what we end up thriving on unless we're willing to change or reprogram our subconscious mind. All negative thought comes up and is in our existence, I should say. And we might go throughout the day depressed about something or angry about something because we didn't take the time to reprogram our mind. And to me, that's what these four questions do. They help me reprogram my mind. Is it absolutely true? Well, of course, it's not absolutely true. So how do you react, or what happens when you believe that thought? Well, if I believe the thought that's not true, then I'm putting a perception on something that I don't have all the facts on. And so then I react in a way that might be volatile or not. You know, or I might withdraw. That's another example. When I believe that thought. Now, who would I be without that thought? Well, if I eliminate that thought or change that thought and realize that what I might be thinking isn't absolutely true, and I get rid of that thought, I tell my subconscious mind, no, I don't want to think like that right now. I'm going to reprogram my mind, and I'd rather, you know, believe that it's not true. And that's a big relief for me. I get into a state of consciousness where there's no stress anymore. I'm relieved, and I can get on with my life. And I just love what is. And then what happens is we turn that thought around. So we give, in the work, when you do the work, you find three genuine or specific examples of how each turnaround is true in your life. And I think, Anne, if I remember right, when we get to this last part of the show, you'll see that she does that with me. So what we're going to do is take some public service announcements. And then I want you to just sit back, enjoy the show. At the very end, if there's some time, we'll get into a little meditation. And so where you could kind of dwell on what just took place on the show and absorb it. And maybe you might be interested in going to the website. Byron Katie's website is thework.com. On that website, it's fantastic. She has a lot of books that you can purchase or material that you can purchase. There's these little handbooks that I used to carry around with me that takes you through the inquiry. There's videos, beautiful, great videos where Byron actually does the work with people. There's podcasts. There's all sorts of things on that website. So that's at thework.com. All right. We'll get into these announcements and then go to the second part of the show. With Ann Howe. And this is, I'm going to call this the Byron Katie Show. Why not? So, getting back to some of the things we were discussing, why is seeking love and approval or appreciation outside of ourself, and how does that cause suffering?
So this is also one of the most fundamental premises of the work. Whenever we seek love, approval, and appreciation outside of ourself, we suffer. And the reason for that is that we are love. It's who we are. It's our natural state. So we can share love. We can share all these things. But we tend as human beings to try to get filled up from the outside, and it never works.
Would you call that codependency, or
well,
is that a little different?
It depends. You know, it depends on how healthy or unhealthy a relationship is. And it can definitely devolve into codependency. But even more subtle ways, the ego is always trying to manipulate ways to get its needs met outside of itself. And when we come to realize that that just isn't possible, then we start giving ourselves what we want from others. And it's a really kind way to live. And like I said, it doesn't mean we can't enjoy relationships. We can, but they're healthier. They're like each person is standing under their own vine and fig tree. And then we have a wonderful relationship.
All right.
Yeah.
Yeah,
so it's a very deep work. I mean, I would say the vast majority of people I work with are working at letting go of looking outside of themselves for love, approval, or appreciation. You know, Katie says, take out the middleman and give it to yourself. If we want others to appreciate us, if we even have that thought, it's because we're not appreciating ourselves.
Okay, so now I can see how that could go into not just our relationship with another person, but also at work with bosses and you know, other people we work with, our peers.
It's true for everyone. No matter who we come into contact with, if we are projecting these subconscious needs for love, approval, or appreciation onto others, then that makes the relationship not clear. It's not a clean relationship. And so much of this, you know, stems back to our childhoods. I would say that all the core wounds and beliefs that we have come from expecting our parents, wanting our parents, needing our parents to give us love, approval, and appreciation. But the truth is our parents were just human beings like us, and they didn't have the skills to do that. And so what Byron Katie recommends is become the parent you're waiting for. Give to yourself what you wanted your parents to give you. And I had a lot of issues with my father, and I did many worksheets on him. And the last one I did was, I actually saw that he was my mirror. All the things that I didn't like about him, I could find in myself, and it was so liberating. And then after that, all I've ever felt is love, oneness, because that's who we really are.
Sure.
We are love, and we are all one. And that doesn't mean, for instance, my father had a bad temper. It doesn't mean you condone that behavior, and it doesn't mean that you have to hang out with him. But it just means that if you get triggered by, for example, your father, then there's some work to do. And when you do all your work, then there's only compassion left. You just have compassion for people who are suffering because they're believing their own stressful thoughts. And you know that it's because of the way they were raised by their parents and their parents. So this is very deep ancestral
work. I was just going to say that.
Yeah.
You could go back because we're dealing with different mindsets.
Well, we're dealing with a typical human mindset.
Mm-hmm.
Because, you know, we somehow, as a child, we look to our parents as God.
Mm-hmm.
And naturally so, because they actually do keep us alive. They take care of us. But there comes a time when we have to internally just forgive them for their failures.
Sure. Now, what about people that were raised without parents? People that were orphaned, or people that, for some reason, the father or the mother left the house?
Well, somebody raised them, unless they were raised by wolves, you know. And that's a whole nother story.
Right.
But it's caregivers.
Caregivers.
It would be caregivers if you didn't have your parents.
Mm-hmm.
Whoever was your most significant caregiver.
Okay.
Yeah.
All right.
And when you do the work, you actually get to the place where you tap into the core issue. So, for example, on this worksheet that you wrote, just read that first statement.
In this situation, who
anchored... You don't have to read that, but just read the sentence.
The one that I did?
Yeah, Joan.
Oh, I'm exasperated with Joan because she gets stressed when I don't do things the way she would.
Okay, so I would predict, because of all the hundreds of clients I've worked with, that as you delve into that work, it's actually going to take you back to a memory of your father or your mother who was not happy with the way you did something.
Sure, I could see that right now, as soon as you mentioned.
So it's always about father, mother. Mm-hmm. And so what happens is, until we become the parent we're waiting for, and we realize our parents did the best they could. Katie always says, nobody is to blame. Nobody is to blame, including ourselves. And it's such a nice way to live. But you see, all the problems that we have now stem from our childhood.
Mm-hmm.
But you have to go through the process. And you will feel it internally. It's a very instinctual understanding, and you get images that arise and memories come up. And when you have completed the work on your father-mother issue with them not liking the way you did something, you won't draw that into your world anymore. It just won't. That's how the world works. We only draw into our world the things that are unconscious, subconscious in us that need to come up and out. Yeah.
Yeah. Okay. Well, that makes a lot of sense.
And then, while we're in the process, we have compassion for ourselves and we have compassion for the other, the person who's triggered this. And so that's really, it's a very deep awakening to how, you know, Katie says it's a friendly universe. Mm-hmm. And I really took issue with that when I came into the work, because I could give you a million examples of why it wasn't a friendly universe. And so the work is really very non-dual. It really goes beyond bad and good, right and wrong. And that's when we become less judgmental about ourselves and others, when we come to realize that everybody's doing the best they can.
Yeah, because I could see in different instances where I'll get triggered by something, and then I'll storm off, and then later on, after I go through this whole thing of judging myself,
right,
or blaming the other person,
right,
I want to come back for some reconciliation. And at that time, when we were able to discuss and go over what occurred, all of a sudden, what I thought might have been true, oh, it's so-and-so's fault, or
right,
it's not me, you know, isn't.
Yeah.
But it takes that,
yeah,
it takes that, I don't know if you want to call it courage, whatever you want to talk, but it takes that initiative to reconciliate, to come to resolve,
yes,
with whatever issue has happened.
And in the work, mm-hmm, what I have experienced is that I don't have to storm off anymore. I don't have to do that because I've done, I'm so aware that it's my own stuff, mm-hmm, if I get triggered.
Well, that's interesting, because when I say storm off, what I actually do is shut down right
okay.
away.
Yeah. And so there's nothing wrong with excusing oneself.
Okay.
And or I would say it's better to shut down than to express anger outwardly to the person. What I have come to see is that anger is a raw energy that can be rechanneled into constructive avenues. And the anger is a natural emotion. There's nothing wrong with it. But we just have to notice what we're doing with it. Like, my father had a terrible temper, and he controlled us all with it.
With the temper, sure.
And he also was wonderful. He was charming. Mm-hmm. He was playful. Mm-hmm. He was a brilliant artist. I mean, I could go on and on about all his great qualities. But because of his own unmet needs and not knowing that he could give it to himself, and of course I didn't know that at the time when I was little, he would use that temper to shut everybody else down when he couldn't handle whatever was going on. So anger is natural. Fear is natural. Fear is actually a useful emotion because it might give you survival. You mm-hmm. know, we're not in the jungle anymore, in a way, but there, if you're out on the road and a car's coming at you, yeah, you should feel fear while you veer out of the way. So none of these emotions are bad. They're just not. But if we let them just uncontrolled expression, if we let them have uncontrolled expression, then that's not really healing anything. It's not healing us, and it's not healing the situation.
Okay. Well, what do you say we delve into this worksheet? Because you had me do a little worksheet
yeah.
here. And I'm curious to see
yeah.
how we go through this.
Yeah, I have to say, I read all of Byron Katie's books after I found the one on your mm-hmm. coffee table.
Okay.
And I had a great intellectual understanding of it. But until I went to my first session, I did not experience what the work is. So you have to experience it. And the way to do it is to
delve right in. Okay. So it's a set of six questions, and then...
Well, the Judge Your Neighbor worksheet is a set of six questions.
Six questions, but the actual work is four questions.
Yeah.
You want to explain that?
Okay, so for each statement on mm-hmm. your Judge Your Neighbor worksheet, mm-hmm. I will ask you the four questions.
Oh.
And we will do the turnarounds on each.
On each?
Well, it's not, you don't do it on number five and six,
okay.
But you will do it on the first four. Mm-hmm. I just want to say right now that for the people listening, that you can go to Katie's website, which is thework.com, and you can download all of these free resources. You can download the Judge Your Neighbor worksheet and many other free resources. And we have a volunteer helpline to help you do the work, too. So, there. Now I've said that. So,
okay.
That's important.
That is. All right. And
so, just for the interest of time, why don't you just mm-hmm. read your number one, which is really the umbrella. Number one statement is your overarching concern.
Okay. So, do you want me to read how it starts out in the situation, or just read
what I
put down?
So, why don't you tell me the situation first, and then you can read in this situation. So the way this works is you actually pinpoint a moment in time when you, from out of which the worksheet arose. So where
okay.
were you when this happened?
Okay, so in fact, I brought this into a men's group on Monday nights, and I worked on this a little bit in the men's group last time we had group. And it's this sensation of feeling like, for instance, my wife is looking over my shoulder. What are you doing? Or, you know, so, and that's how it affects me. I feel like.
But I want you to stick to this worksheet that you've written.
Right. Okay.
So where
so
were
I used
you
the
when
name,
this happened?
Where was I?
Oh, if you want to keep it confidential, that's okay.
Yeah, I used a different name in here.
Okay. All right. So let's just go with it. Just read number one.
Yeah. But this catches it, what it is, okay?
Yeah.
I am exasperated with, I'll just say Marion, because she gets stressed when I don't do something the way she would.
Okay. So Marion gets stressed when you don't do something the way she would.
Right.
Okay. So the first question, and you need to just take a gentle breath and relax.
Okay.
Is that true, Jim? That she gets stressed when you don't do something the way she wants you to do it.
You know, it's probably not.
So it's just a yes or a
oh,
no.
Oh, yes or no.
And if it's
is
a probably
it
not, then you can still say yes, and mm-hmm. I'll ask you the second question.
Oh, okay.
Okay. Can you?
In my eyes, yes.
So good. And you can't do it wrong.
Okay.
You cannot do it wrong.
Okay.
Can you absolutely know that it's true that, I better read this, that Marion gets stressed when you don't do it the way she would? Can you absolutely know that that's true?
No.
Okay.
Not
absolutely. So Jim knew right away, but often I ask clients to sit for a full minute and just contemplate. Can I absolutely know that that's true?
Yeah, absolutely is the key word.
Yeah.
And I have
and
no
I
clue.
Know, Jim, I know you've done a lot of inner work, yeah. And so you got it really quickly. But give yourself all the time you need. Okay.
Okay.
So now that was two questions.
Okay.
Is it true? Can you absolutely know that it's true?
All
now
right.
The third question actually has some sub-questions under it that help flesh out how you react. So you can find that also download for free on the website. So Jim, how do you react when you're believing the thought that Marion gets stressed when you don't do a task the way she would? What happens?
Ooh. So I actually think that I'm doing her harm. It's unhealthy for her.
Okay.
So it makes me concerned that I'm causing her stress.
Okay. So
I'm causing her stress.
Yes. So this is what we call stories.
Ah.
So the work is about not, so my job as a facilitator is to keep you from going into stories. And if you had the sub-questions in front of you, that would probably help you know how to respond to question three. No, this is called the facilitation guide. So I'm going to ask you a few questions from here.
Okay.
These are the questions that actually help you answer how you react when you're believing that thought.
Okay.
So the first one is, what emotions do you feel when you're believing that thought that Marion gets stressed if you don't do the task the way she would? What emotions do you feel when you're believing that thought?
First, I'm upset.
Okay, so in the interest of time, I'm going to ask you to find the physical sensation inside of you, in your body. Where do you feel that upset?
Right here.
In your heart.
Right here, right now, yeah.
Jim's pointing to his heart. Now I want you to describe as deeply and closely as you can, what does that feel like, that upset in your heart?
Well, I have a shortness of breath.
Okay. You forget to breathe, probably,
mm-hmm.
right?
Absolutely. I'm holding my breath.
And anything else? Just, you have to get very still to do this work. And so just take another few seconds and see if there's anything else. This is what happens, how you react when you believe the thought. You get upset. You feel it in your heart. Anything else? Any other emotions?
Well, I want to blame. I want to blame her for feeling stressed, even though I don't even know if she's stressed or not.
Yeah. Okay. So another sub-question in question three is, how do you treat her when you're believing that thought? That she gets stressed when you don't do a task the way she would. How do you treat her when you're believing that thought?
Not good. I get pretty gruff.
Yeah.
And it's almost like, oh, come on. Yeah. You got to be kidding me.
Okay, so that's enough, because that's your story.
Mm-hmm.
How do you treat yourself when you're believing that Marion gets stressed when you don't do the task the way she would? How do you treat yourself? And I've already heard you address this, but say it again. What do you do to yourself?
Well, I shut down.
Yes. Close your eyes, Jim, and notice. Look at, see the image of where you are and where Marion is. And you're shutting down. And how are you treating yourself? This is a really hard question to answer.
It is. It's very hard. It's I mean, I go in to start blaming myself because I ruined the day.
So that's how you treat yourself when you're believing the thought. Mm-hmm. Okay? Now I want you to, again, take a gentle breath and see if you can contact your earliest memory. It could be an image or whatever. The first time you had the thought that somebody didn't like the way you did the task, that you didn't do it the way that they wanted you to.
Well, the very first thing that comes to my mind is, as a child, we got a bike. It's a little bit too big for me, and I didn't want it to hit in my groin area, so I went in my dad's workshop and took a hacksaw and hacksawed the bar in the middle, and he had just gotten us these bikes.
Yeah.
Took that bar out. Well, we're riding the bike, and sure enough, that was a support system, so the bike broke. I walk home with both parts of the bike in each hand, left and right. First thing I got was a big spanking.
So that's a really important memory.
Mm-hmm.
And what I always do with clients is I'll say, that's a sidebar, and you need to write a worksheet on that situation. Mm. Because this is the core. That's a huge thing. I can really feel how important that was. It was very, unfortunate.
Yeah, but now I I see that because a lot of what it is, I want to be able to experience life. I want to be able to do things, whether they're right or wrong, so that I could correct them because it's my experience.
Yeah.
And that was my experience with the bike. I was...
Yes. So that's a good story.
And so now I
can
see.
And that's an important story.
Okay, so good.
So this is something I do that's not necessarily what Katie does, but oftentimes it's really valuable to go inside and contact. How old were you when that happened?
Oh gosh, I don't know. I probably
about
when you start riding a bike, maybe 7 or 8,
yeah,
something like that.
So you have to go back to that little Jim who's 7 or 8, and you really have to tell him, I love that you were exploring and figuring things out. You're the one who needs to go back to that part of yourself who still is looking over his shoulder that, you know, somebody wants him to do it differently.
Mm-hmm.
Okay? It's going to be really important because once you... This is often called inner child work. But what happens is when you've really reintegrated that child part of yourself, then that won't even be an issue anymore. You won't even have that image arise because it's all resolved. You're the parent you've been waiting for. You tell little Jim what you would have liked your dad to have said.
Oh.
You're awesome. That was really creative.
Yeah,
I mean, it didn't work out very well.
Right, but,
you know, you might have to pay for it for a year with allowances. There's consequences.
Right.
But you know what? You're great.
Yeah, you were thinking.
Yeah. Give it to yourself. Take out the middleman and give yourself what you wanted your dad to say.
Oh, that's great.
Do you feel how liberating
that
is?
Oh, yeah. I have a big smile on my face now. I'm, literally, I feel good.
Yeah,
I feel
I'm like
a rush going
chills
through me. Yeah.
This is how profound this work is because nobody's wrong. You understand why your dad did it. His dad did it to him.
Sure.
And his dad did it to him. This has been going on forever. Right?
Sure.
Yeah. So... Yeah, I'm good. Like just totally feeling bliss.
I mean, it answers something that's going on right now on certain projects I have to do. I'm getting a lot of input from everybody, family members and stuff, and I'm like froze.
Okay.
It's like I'm afraid to do what I want to do because it might not.
Yeah.
I'm hearing that I told you so.
Well, and you know what? I told you so is okay if you do it and it doesn't work.
Right.
And you're like, yeah, I wanted to be creative more than I wanted to follow the traditional route, right?
Right.
So you have to be able to take the consequences of your choices.
Mm-hmm.
There's no question about that. But I suspect that once you fully integrate honoring little Jim for his creativity, then those situations aren't going to keep in coming back on you because you don't need to address it anymore because you forgive your dad. I mean, because subconsciously you're probably holding that against your dad for you know, giving you a bad time about it.
Well,
so
yeah, there could very well be. I haven't really gone there, but that story comes up all the time, a lot with me.
And I love how that image arose for you. That is your inner wisdom. Your inner wisdom is always going to give you the images that are the key. You know, it's kind of like the breadcrumbs to your
it
little
is. It's amazing.
Way
I know the color of the bike and everything, you know, how big it was or small in that case.
And the most important thing is for you to love that precious little boy. Can you feel how much he needs to be honored?
Sure.
For his good intentions.
Right.
Yeah. So that's the work. And then, you know, that's all part of question three. How do you react when you believe that thought? And so what I often do, the fourth question is, who would you be without the thought? So I'm going to do something that I often do because I found it to be helpful, is I'll say, what do you fail to see when you're believing the thought that Marion gets stressed when you do a task differently than the way she would? What do you fail to see when you're believing that thought?
Well, I fail to see an alternative way of doing something.
Okay.
And I fail I fail to accept input.
Okay. Yes. So now I'm going to ask you question four. Who would you be without the thought that Marion gets stressed when you don't do a task the way she would? What? Who would you be without that thought?
Who would I be?
And you just said you'd be open to hearing other ideas.
Mm-hmm.
And the reason I ask what you fail to see is because oftentimes people cannot find who they are without the thought,
right?
Which is question four.
Mm-hmm.
But what you said, what you failed to see, that's who you are without the thought. You're someone who, you know, can listen to people's ideas and then make your decision.
Yeah, more compromising and...
When it feels appropriate to you.
Mm-hmm.
You don't give up yourself to please others, but you're willing and able to consider other viewpoints.
Yeah.
So without the thought, so that's
I would
who
be,
you are.
I would definitely be more open.
Yeah.
Yeah, open-minded, and, let's put it that way.
Yes, and so Katie says, this question four is where you find proactive solutions.
Mm-hmm.
And I heard a very proactive solution from you. You don't feel threatened when somebody wants to do it differently, but you're just willing to consider it.
Right.
And then you might not...
I might not
do it that way.
Yeah,
but, you know, so this is the breath of fresh air that's breathing into this. So now we're going to experience the turnaround to yourself.
Mm.
So, okay. And this sentence is a little complex. So instead of saying Marion gets stressed, I get stressed when I don't do a task the way I would. That's the complete turnaround to yourself. Find me three genuine, specific examples of where I get stressed, where you get stressed when you don't do a task the way you would.
Well, so am I telling you a feeling?
You know, I'll give you an example.
Like, I'll feel obligated. Okay, so I'm going to do it this way.
Yes.
But it's not like I'm doing it grudgingly. I'm not doing it with love. You
that's
know,
exactly. Okay. That's a very specific, genuine example. I get stressed when I don't do the task the way I would.
Sure.
And so, yeah, when you're grudging,
Or just...
You've kind of given up.
Mm-hmm.
You've,
or I'll procrastinate.
Okay, yeah.
Yeah.
Oh.
Yeah. Well, I don't feel like doing it now.
Yeah.
Like a little boy, you know.
Yeah. And I would say that sometimes it's okay to walk away just to let the air clear and to really get clear about what's right for you.
Mm-hmm.
But I love that you can take into consideration, you know, that you get stressed when you don't do the job the way you would like it to be done. So you find three genuine, specific examples. Now we're going to go to the turnaround to the other. I get, and that's always starts with an I statement, and it shows you on the bottom of the Judge Your Neighbor worksheet how to do the turnarounds. And so the turnaround to the other is, I get stressed when she doesn't do a task the way I would.
Okay.
So give me a specific, genuine example of where you get stressed when Marion doesn't do a task the way you would.
Well, it could be something as simple as packing a car.
Oh, that's not simple. That's a big one. Yeah.
You know.
And so Katie always says, if you can find one example, you can find two.
Mm-hmm. Sure.
And if you can find two, you can find three. And the reason it's important to find these genuine examples is because it actually changes and opens up your neural pathways into the right hemisphere of your brain. Because the brain always wants things to be black and white.
Mm-hmm.
And that's why we get our war down on paper. So when you're believing this original thought, that's the way it is.
Right.
But when you do the turnaround, you're starting to see, oh, and I get stressed when she doesn't do the things the way I want her to
sure.
do it. So what happens, neuroscientists at Stanford studied the work of Byron Katie specifically, and they discovered that that more primitive brain keeps bound in a vicious cycle because there's something secure in keeping our familiar story. This is your story,
mm-hmm.
what you've written on your worksheet.
Okay.
And when you start questioning your stressful thoughts and doing the turnaround, you're actually accessing the right hemisphere of your brain, which is more open to other possibilities. And so you get a more open mind. So the questioned mind drops into its sweet home in the heart.
Mm.
That's what Katie says.
Mm-hmm.
So can you find one more example, just for the listeners anyway, of how you get stressed when Marion doesn't do a task the way that you want her to do it? Find another example. Besides packing the car.
Besides packing the car. Well, I'd have to say...
it can be the smallest thing.
It's okay, the smallest thing, that's great. Just a simple thing like leaving the house.
She doesn't leave it the way you want her to.
Yeah, I'm ready to go.
Oh, okay.
And she's still...
Yeah.
Still there, getting things, or forgetting about things, or, oh, I wanted to get this, or she stages everything, and it takes, it. So I'm sitting there thinking it takes forever.
So you can stop, because that was an example.
Okay.
So you learn to not keep going into story
after
story.
Yeah, otherwise I start blaming. And
it's like you're justifying. The ego always wants to blame, defend, justify. And so the role of the facilitator is to get the answer,
mm-hmm.
and then, you know, sometimes you need a little bit of story for context,
mm-hmm.
but I got enough. I really get that example.
Mm-hmm.
So we're going to move on to the turnaround to the opposite. That's the last turnaround. So now I want you to find where Marion does not get stressed when you don't do a task the way she would. And just take a gentle breath, because it'll arise. You'll find it. Where she doesn't get stressed.
Well, like for instance, if I'm in the refrigerator, I open up the refrigerator and I grab something, like eggs or something, put it over there on the counter, refrigerator's door still open, you know, and then I go back and pull something else out, one thing at a time. So all of a sudden I hear, will you shut that refrigerator door? Now, she's not really stressed. You know, she's like, we need to save energy. That thing's going on. Can you do it a different way?
So are you saying she doesn't get stressed when she asks you to close the refrigerator
right.
door? Okay.
Mm-hmm. I think she does.
You think she gets stressed?
Yeah, because I've got it open longer than she would like.
Okay, but I want a really authentic, genuine example of where you know she doesn't get stressed. When you... do a task differently than the way she would.
I'm not thinking anything off the top of my head. Maybe she never gets stressed. No, I'm just kidding.
I bet you do some things where she's like, wow, that was awesome. And it's not the way she would have done it.
Right.
This is where you're getting your synapses to fire into the right hemisphere of your brain to get a more open mind. Do you see how tightly we want to hold on to our story?
Sure, absolutely.
Yeah. That's why... the work only works when you live it. You have to find these examples. They're really important.
Mm-hmm. Okay.
And if you can't find them, because, I mean, here you are on the spot on your radio show. That's okay. But if you want to be free, you can find those examples when you have time to just sit and contemplate.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Okay.
So the work is meditation.
Mm-hmm.
You really take a deep dive. It's hard. Many tears come out. It's very cleansing and liberating. And I think you've done an amazing job. I think people can really get an idea of what the work is from what you've done.
Yeah. So. But that is key, you know, to work on yourself and not blame others. And
they're there to show you what you can't see. That's why we point the finger outwards, because we've already judged ourselves. But if we... judge outside of ourselves and get it down on paper, then we actually get to find what we really need to know in order to be free.
Great. Yeah. So we're getting to the end of the show here, Anne, and before I thank you immensely, especially doing some work with me, can you give the website again and where people can actually download these worksheets and do some work?
Yes. So Byron Katie's website is thework.com, and she has a lot of videos of examples of doing the work with many people on, it's broken down into different subject matters. So if you have something specific that you are suffering with, you can watch her doing the work on that particular subject with someone, as well as getting all the free resources, as well as calling the Do the Work helpline, where we all volunteer, and it's a 24/7 thing that you can access, you know, to get help. And then I have my own website, which is kindreality.com. And I have some articles that I've written that are on that website, as well as my own story and different resources that I have personally found to be really useful.
Great. Well, again, Anne, I want to thank you very much for being on the show, for doing some actual work with me. That was fantastic. And maybe in the future I could have you on as a guest.
Sure.
We're going to have Ladies' Night. That would be a nice show to get together with some other ladies and help us guys.
Yeah. Well.
In relationship.
Yeah. And so one of the things we do in the work is we have each person in the couple write a worksheet on their partner. And then you read it, the whole worksheet, to your partner, and they have to say thank you at the end of each statement. And then they, you know, the other person does that to their partner. And it's a beautiful thing.
Well, in that case, I want to thank my wife, Marion, for letting me use her name and this example.
It's true. You know, Katie says the people you live with are your gurus. They show you everything you don't want to know about yourself. And we do that for each other all day long. Mm-hmm. And it gets... it's like the refinement, you know, it just gets finer and finer.
Yeah.
And, you know, we just keep, it becomes a way of life. And I know you're already doing that because I've known you and Marion for 13 years now. And you've always inspired me with your dedication to this awakening.
Well, it is.
Yeah.
It's a lot of work, but it's worth it.
It's what we're here for.
That's what we're here for.
Yeah, so all I thank you very much.
Thank you. Take care. God bless.
God bless you.